SpursCast, episode 639. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am your host here on the SpursCast. Since it's a holiday week, I'll be going solo on this episode of the SpursCast that I am recording on a Saturday evening. In this episode, I'll look back at the Spurs going 1-3 in their last four games, the team defense, Trey Jones' start to year two, and Keldon Johnson's improved three-point shooting. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode. So I know that it's been a holiday week, and it's been about 10 days since I last recorded a SpursCast, so there's been quite a few games here that the Spurs have participated in. So let's first begin with the latest games, how the team has done since I last recorded a SpursCast episode, and then also kind of where the team stands in the standings and different things like that, and then also some updates on the roster with player injuries. So since I last recorded, the Spurs did go 1-3 in their last four games. Let's go back to last Thursday. So first of all, we go back to Minnesota, where the Spurs are on the road. This is a pretty bad loss for them. This is a blowout loss against the Minnesota Timberwolves. They lost by 25. Minnesota was only favored by two, but they ended up picking up a 25-point win. And so this was not a good game for San Antonio. They completely got blown out of this game. Then a few nights later on Monday, the Spurs return home for a three-game homestand. Actually, it's multiple games, but for this week, at least three games. So it's a Monday. They lose a close game to the Phoenix Suns. So this is, even though, yes, it's a loss, it's actually a pretty good game for the Spurs. The fact that they actually fell behind by 18 to Phoenix. Phoenix was favored by five, but the Spurs did claw back and actually make it a game in crunch time in the last 5 minutes there. They made the Suns basically work for that win, and Phoenix did, though, hold on for that four-point win against San Antonio. So that's more so of that kind of like that moral victory for the Spurs, the fact that they actually competed with the team that went to the finals last year in Phoenix, and they had most of their players healthy for this game. Then on Wednesday, the Spurs had another bad loss here. This was to the Atlanta Hawks at home in San Antonio. They lost by 18. Atlanta was only favored by 3.5, but they ended up leading by as many as 21. So this is a very comfortable win for Atlanta. And again, another bad loss for San Antonio. They just got, they really didn't have a chance here in this one. Then on Friday, the Spurs picked up a surprising close win against the Boston Celtics by 8 points. The Celtics were favored by 4.5. The Spurs built an early lead on the Celtics by 24 points. Boston did come back and take up to a 7-point lead. But then in the fourth quarter, it was a close game between both teams. And the Spurs actually out-executed Boston. DeJounte Murray hit clutch baskets for San Antonio. So did Derek White. And also their team defense, San Antonio's really locked down the Celtics in that fourth quarter with the last 5 minutes to go. And so the San Antonio did hold on for an 8-point win, which again is considered more so a close win for San Antonio. And they beat a team that was favored by 4.5 in Boston. So the Spurs did go 1-3. In their last four games, according to Vegas, they were supposed to go 0-4, so they kind of defied those odds. And one good thing for San Antonio is they did end their six-game losing streak. I know that going into that Boston game, they were already on a six-game losing streak. And so they were able to stop that losing streak and finally get a win, this time against a team that they weren't basically supposed to beat on paper in the Celtics. So where do the Spurs stand now through 18 games? They are now 5-13 for the season as a whole. They're 13th out west still since I last recorded. They're now 3.5 games behind the Minnesota Timberwolves for 10th in the standings. So out west again for that play-in game. So again, that's going to be something we continue to watch for this team is, how close can they keep it with that whoever's in 10th place, or do they fall, pretty far out where it kind of looks like it's almost, almost impossible to get back into the playoff picture at some point. Where do they stand? I know it's really early. It's less than 20 games, but we do have to start discussing, the lottery because if the Spurs don't get into playoffs, well, then we know they're going to be a lottery team. And so where do they stand right now? Through 18 games, they do have the fifth worst record in the whole NBA. So that means that they would have a 42% chance at the top four pick and then a 11% chance at the number one overall pick. So again, I know it's really early in the season. It's only been 18 games, but we do got to discuss, the lottery situation for the Spurs because, right now, based on their record, they do project not to have a lot of wins this season. And so they could end up being a high lottery team. On offense, they're kind of where we thought they would be going into the season. They're 24th on offense. They're having trouble there. That's kind of been something that we kind of expected with the team losing a lot of their playmakers from last year's team. And then their defense has really slipped a bit here. They've fallen to 16th, and that's actually an improvement because earlier this week they were actually 20th. And so that's going to be one of the topics I'm going to really talk about is this team is still there where they can put together a top 10 type of defense like they did against Boston, but recently they've been slacking in that department. They've been really having some issues. issues there. And so I'll discuss that a bit here in detail later on in the episode. Doug McDermott has missed a few games now. He's missed three games in a row with right knee inflammation. And then also Devin Vassell got injured against the Hawks, and he had to leave early. And he missed his first game of the season against the Celtics on Friday with the Spurs are diagnosing as a right quad contusion. Now, Coach Pop did say that both of these injuries for Devin and for Doug are not serious, so they should be back in the lineup soon. I don't know how long that will be before they return, but it shouldn't be too long. There was also basically the same update on Zach Collins. Coach Pop basically said that the team does expect him back after Christmas, and that's kind of the projection that was given a few weeks ago when Coach Pop was last asked about Zach Collins' status. So the Spurs should be getting him back. Again, I'm estimating here, maybe sometime like in early January, by the time he starts getting some practices in and games under his, and just, you know, getting his win back, then maybe we could see him in early or mid-January is what I would project. Again, that's just my opinion with Zach Collins' return. So now let's go to our second topic of this episode, and that is what I'm calling, here's the name of the title for this topic, I'm calling it Top 10 Defensive Team Is Still There Somewhere. So the Spurs did show against Boston on Friday that, yes, that even though they have slipped a bit defensively, they're still a top 10 type of defense still in this team, you know, with the players still there, and they were able to find that type of team on this night against Boston. So let's just talk about the defense, how they've been doing lately, and why this has been a bit concerning. They had dropped to 20th defensively before that Celtics game. You know, during their losing streak, they had let their opponents score 110 or more in five of those six games. So again, that was an issue. It wasn't just the offense. We know that they struggle on offense. That's kind of been a thing all season. But it was the fact that their defense, which was supposed to be their strong suit of their team, that's actually been an issue for them. Multiple players had been talking about communication, how they're just letting, you know, teams are getting easy layups, wide open threes against them, and just, again, multiple players here had been saying, you know, miscommunication. And so and then there was even after one of these games that they lost, there was even a players meeting held, according to reporting. So again, this has kind of been an issue for this team lately, was the fact that their defense had been starting to slip, and they did show in this one game against Boston on Friday that, yes, they can still get back to that top 10 level where they really did a great job of locking the Celtics down, who have two premier scorers in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And the Spurs did a great job of really, for multiple quarters, they're really holding those players until like the fourth quarter. And so, and the Spurs held the Celtics to 88 points, which is season best for an opponent against the Spurs. So again, there's that ability to be one of those lockdown defenses, and then we do know that when the Spurs are able to hold their opponent below 100 points, they win their games 4 out of 5. They have 4 of their 5 wins, should I say, have come because they've held their opponents below 100 points. So again, when they play that lockdown type defense, that's going to usually end with success for the team. So let's just kind of go through the defensive numbers and see where the Spurs are at right now. I'm going to first begin with the good stuff, with the good on defense for the team. Let's talk about where are they elite? Where are they top 10 right now on defense through 18 games? They're elite in not putting teams on the free throw line. They're still doing a really good job of this. Opponent free throw rate, they're fifth. They're really good in transition defense. They're fifth in opponent fast break points, so they don't let teams get out on the break and score on them. They're still pretty good in forcing teams to turn the ball over. They're eighth there in opponent turnover percentage, so they're sort of good aggressive defense in making you turn the ball over. They're seventh in steals, like we said, you know, long quick defenders, DeJounte Murray, Devin Vassell, all those kind of players, Derek White. They're very good about forcing teams into turnovers. And then, you know, this one looks like a good stat, but again, it's something that I've talked about here in the Spurs Cats. It's a very concerning stat. It's that they're seventh best in opponent restricted area accuracy. So you know, on paper, yes, this looks like a good stat. Yes, they're seventh there. But again, teams are making 63% of their shots in that area, and that's a concern because if you're basically getting 6 out of 10 times the closest area to the rim, which is either a dunk or a layup, if you're making those as an opponent and you're getting there a lot, which is what's happening to the Spurs' defense, then that's a very big issue, the fact that teams are getting to the closest area of the basket, the most efficient area. So yes, even though that stat looks elite because they're seventh best in that category, it's not quite a good stat because again, they're letting teams get there a lot to the rim, which is the easiest place to score on the floor. Where are they average defensively? You know, they're average in keeping opponents off the board. You know, they're 15th in opponent offensive rebound percentage. They're 12th they're 14th in defensive rebound percentage. This, though, I would attribute more so because they play a lot more small lineups, you know, with one traditional big, whether it's Jakob Poeltl or Drew Eubanks or Thad Young. They don't play a lot of, you know, traditional two big lineups. And we even saw Coach Pop experiment in this game against the Celtics for a few minutes where he actually had Keldon Johnson play the five. All he had was guards and wings and no bigs at all on the floor. And you know, Coach Pop is kind of experimenting with going a little bit smaller, it seems, at this point. They're 11th in points off turnovers. You know, that's not too concerning. They were top 10 there, so they might get back in there if they just get a few more points there off the turnovers from the opponents. They're 12th in blocks, which, again, playing small lineups, you kind of expect that they're, even though some of their wing players can get blocks, it's just going to be an issue for this team of not being one of those elite teams in getting blocks. They're 17th in forcing teams to take the mid-range. So, again, that's a concerning sign that teams are not, you know, settling for the mid-range, which is what you want to do, because that's a very inefficient shot. They're getting closer to the rim, or they're getting threes against Spurs. They're 17th in opponent three-point accuracy, and so again, it's not bottom 10 to have that the teams are shooting and the threes against them, but again, it's a concern because the Spurs are dead last in three-point attempts, and they're also have trouble making threes themselves. So anytime that they're getting outscored from that three-point line, that's going to be a big issue for this team. Kind of what I said earlier, you know, they're 20th in making opponents take those floater range shots, those non-restricted area inefficient shots. Teams just don't take that many shots against the Spurs because they can either get to the closest area of the rim, which is the restricted area, or they can take threes against the Spurs. So they're getting the two efficient shots that they want, the opponents, against the Spurs' defense. And then I already went the opponent three-point accuracy. And then bottom 10, where are they really having their issues? These are the areas that they need to find some improvement to get back to that top 10 level here. And that's opponent effective field goal percentage. So this is just looking at how do opponents shoot from the floor and then plus the three-point shot, and kind of it's a formula that kind of adjusts those two numbers. And so they're 26 in this area. So again, even though their accuracy is more so like average, I would say opponent accuracy from three is about average. It's the fact that teams are getting to the closest area of the basket, the restricted area, that's really bumping up that percentage for the opponents, and it's just an efficient night for teams when they attack the rim. The opponent restricted area, like I mentioned earlier, how often teams are getting in there, that's 26 for the Spurs. Again, that's a very concerning sign that's the easiest place to get dunks or layups, and the Spurs are 26 and allowing shots there. And that was one thing that they did very well against Boston. Boston really struggled to get shots in the restricted area against the Spurs, and then also to finish there. So that was one good sign. And I think that number could improve a little bit with Jakob Poeltl back, but it's also a concern because this was an area that the Spurs struggled with last year as well, letting teams basically get to the closest area of the basket. The NHL season is underway, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. Doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a deft deflection. However they light the lamp, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. Basketball, football, UFC, you name it. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Throw down $1 on any NHL game and win 100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net nets you a big win with promo code TBPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. They're 21st in opponent floater attempts, so teams, again, don't have to take that many floaters against them. They're 25th in points in the paint, so even though we know that the Spurs are one of the top teams in scoring in the paint themselves, they're letting the it's kind of canceling itself out a little bit because opponents are getting points as well in the paint against the Spurs. And again, this is a highlight against the Celtics that the Spurs did a great job of limiting Boston's points in the paint to an inefficient number. But again, on the normal nights, the average nights, the Spurs are struggling there. And then, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the mid-range accuracy is also a concern. Just a bit of a concern that teams, the Spurs have the 26th defense in mid-range accuracy for the opponents. So again, I think that if you can get the opponents to take the mid-range, that's a good shot. That's a good formula for your defense. So you kind of want that. You want to encourage opponents to take those mid-rangers more so than getting to the closest area of the rim or at the three-point line. And then just some other numbers that do paint this picture is when we talk about the three-point shooting. Opponents are attempting 51% of their threes wide open against the Spurs. And so I try to figure out the league average there, and the league average is 41%. So basically, opponents are getting 10% more wide open threes against the Spurs' defense than against the average team. And then also, opponents are making 42% of their wide open threes. And what does this mean? This would be like the Clippers, who are the third best team in wide open threes accuracy-wise. This would be basically like every team the Spurs play on average is like the Clippers. They're basically making those wide open threes at a very good number. 42.7% is what the Clippers shoot, and opponents on average shoot 42% from wide open three against the Spurs' defense. So again, this is an issue where the Spurs really need to figure out, this is something I've talked about before, where they need to figure out how to, you know, if they're not going to take threes and make a lot of threes themselves, well then they need to figure out how to become somebody like Washington, where they're one of those elite teams in learning how to force teams off the three-point line and limit those amount of wide open threes, and then you know, forcing them more so into those mid-rangers and those non-restricted area floater range shots, rather than you know, letting teams get as close as possible to the basket at the rim, or making teams limit their three-point attempts. Now, I think some of these defensive numbers are going to get better with Jakob Poeltl back. I know that he had missed so many games due to the health and safety protocols. So that should maybe get back to maybe we should see some defensive improvement, and maybe that game against Boston was a good sign. But again, if they have trouble like they did against Atlanta and against some of these other teams like Minnesota, where they're just not communicating and things like that, we can see that this team can have a lot of trouble, especially on the defensive side, which is going to be their calling card this season. That's going to have to be their strength no matter what for the season, whether threes go in or out. That needs to be their number one area of focus is the defense. So again, we'll kind of see what happens with the defense. Moving on to our third topic, and this is I just want to talk a little bit about Trey Jones' start to year two, of his second season. We know that he had a tough time, starting this year because he ended up on the injured list, basically. He missed all of preseason, and then he had a tough time kind of just getting back into rhythm to start the year. And so far, he has played in 16 games for the team, 16 of the 18 games. The only two times he didn't play were because of DNPs from Coach Pop. He's averaging about, 9 minutes, 8.7 minutes per game. He's scoring 4 points on three shot attempts, and then one assist. And so he's just very, even though, 4 points doesn't sound like a lot, it's just the fact that he's a very efficient player, and he knows what he's doing on the court with his decision making. It's very, he knows whether he needs to pass the ball, whether he wants to take a shot. And so with the shots that he does take, he's very efficient with those shots. So we do know that 45% of his attempts come from that non-restricted area, which is that floater range. Then 43% of his attempts come from the restricted area, which is like your layup, range of that area closest to the basket. And so he does a good job of basically just sticking in the paint where 88% of his shots come from, and just making sure that if he's going to shoot the ball, it's going to be from one of those two areas. He really doesn't mess around with the mid-range, only 6% of his attempts, and he doesn't mess around with the three-point line, only 6% of his attempts from there. When he does take a shot in the floater range right now, he's doing very well. He's making 59% of his shots from that floater range, and that's basically like money for him right now, where he's getting over a point per shot on that shot. So right now, the data does say, yes, Trey Jones should keep taking those shots if they're there for him. When he gets into the restricted area, the closest area to the basket, he's finishing very well against the defense. He's making 67% of his restricted area attempts, which are, like I said, layups for him, and so he's doing a very good job of that. So again, if he continues to take those shots specifically, and as long as he's having these close accuracy numbers, then those are very good efficient shots for him. And we see that in some of the data when we look at the points per possession amongst all Spurs players. He's basically fourth most efficient among rotation players, behind only DeJounte Murray, Keldon Johnson, and Devin Vassell. So basically, when Trey puts up a shot, he's doing so very efficiently. We know, just looking at the data, we know that it's going to be a good shot for him because he's not taking shots that he's not comfortable with, and those are basically very efficient shots for him. He's basically getting a lot of value for the shots that he's putting up right now. We also know that he's been one of the leaders and one of the players that can drive the ball for the team and get into the teeth of the defense. He's basically sixth in most drives on the team. And when we look at players off the bench, he's basically third behind only Lonnie Walker IV and Devin Vassell. When he does drive the ball, 57% of the time he shoots it, 30% of the time he passes it, and then 9% of the time he does turn it over, and then he doesn't get to the free throw line too much, just 2% of the time when he drives the ball does he get to the free throw line. And he's also shooting well whenever he does drive the ball. Whenever he drives and takes a shot, he's making 52% of those attempts on drives, which again is over a point per shot. And then we just know he's a good defender. Nothing really pops out on the team, compared to his teammates when you look at some of his stats, but he's about average on most of their areas on defense. And, deflections, steals, defensive field goal percentage, contested shots, and then also not drawing a lot of fouls, and then also defensive rebounding. So basically, you know, he's not popping out as one of the elite players on the team in these categories, but he's also not one of the worst players in these categories. He's about basically like average in all of his numbers per 36 when we look at all those different stats for Trey Jones. So again, Jones is having a good start here. He's starting to get more increased minutes, and it looks like Pop's starting to go to him a little bit more so as that default backup point guard, or he plays him sometimes at the two where he's looking like a combo guard at times. And so basically what we are seeing is, you know, he's not going to let you down on defense, and then on offense he's starting to be a very productive player. Even though it's not a lot of scoring for you, he's at least being very efficient when he does put shots up on the team in year two for Trey Jones. And then the last topic I want to discuss is I just want to talk about Keldon Johnson's improvement from 3-point shooting range. And I want to mention this because I know that here on the Spurscast, if you listen each week, we've kind of discussed Keldon shooting, you know, more so on the negative side where he really struggled. And, you know, at times teams were basically leaving him wide open and daring him to shoot from three early on in the season when he was really struggling. But now, you know, he's really picked it up, this number. Now, he doesn't take that many attempts. He only takes Keldon only 2.8 attempts per game. But at least when he takes the attempts, he's efficient with the shots that he's putting up from three. He's now up to 39% on accuracy on the team with 51 total attempts, and 39% is a good number here. It's second best amongst rotation players behind only Doug McDermott, and he's basically tied in accuracy with Devin Vassell, even though we know that Vassell is more so of your actual 3-point shooter because he actually takes more attempts than Keldon. That's one of his go-to shots. But again, you know, the fact that Keldon's taking these threes now, it's looking like a more efficient shot compared to some of his teammates. We've also seen this in the wide open threes data. I know that here on the Spurscast for a few times, I mentioned how Keldon's like attempting 67% of his threes are attempted wide open, 70% of his attempts are attempted wide open. And this basically means defenses were daring him to take the three, you know, to here, have the three all day that you want. Well, now that number's climbed down to just 55% of Keldon's attempts are attempted wide open. So again, we're even seeing now more so that defense as well have seen that, hey, this guy started to make threes now. Maybe we don't want to give him as many wide open attempts. So we're starting to see that in the data that only 55% of Keldon's threes are attempted wide open now that he's started to improve his accuracy. And then even when he takes the wide open three, he's actually making it. He's got his percentage up to 36% on those attempts as well, which is over a point per shot. And again, if he can get over 40%, then that's going to be a really good number for him on those wide open threes. So again, Keldon, I just want to give a shout out to Keldon here. The fact that I know that I've been a little negative on him with his 3-point shooting, you know, in past Spurscast episodes. So we do want to highlight that he has improved. You know, basically, accuracy wise, he's basically one of the best shooters on this team at this point because so many of the other players are struggling from outside on this team. So before we wrap up this episode, don't forget to visit projectspurs.com. You know, Stephen Michael continues to analyze each game. So he has his going for three series after each Spurs game. And then also, you know, with the draft, I know it's months away. Benjamin Bornstein, though, is looking at different draft prospects. His latest article is on Jabari Smith. So if you want to check that out, and like I mentioned earlier, if the Spurs don't do well this season, well, then they're going to end up probably with like a top 10 pick if they don't make the playoffs here, if they really struggle. So we'll kind of see what happens. And again, Ben's kind of getting you prepared for the draft. Thanks to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.